Hi everyone, you're listening to the Vialucci podcast, uncensored and completely unedited discussions about life and everything in it. We hope you enjoy the show.
Graham Smith, how are you doing, my friend?
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, good, not too bad, not too bad. well, let's just get straight to it. So your book.
Hi everyone, by the way.
Yeah, hello. what a wonderful book. Abolish the monarchy, why we should and how we will.
Lovely title, straight to the point.
Yeah.
No mucking around.
Do you know what I like about you, Graham? I listen to a lot of your stuff. It's you're the person I want to be when I talk about the royals because I'm still at that stage of a little bit angry about it, but you have that sort of equanimity that I'm not having a go. I'm just telling you this is the fact. And you never change. It always stays there. You never get angry, which is quite an immature way to be. It doesn't solve anything. So when I listen to you, I think, yeah, he's the bloke. Listen to him. He's the mature one. When did the book come out?
June this year.
Who published it? Was it Penguin?
Penguin,
yeah. When did it? You start thinking about doing a book?
Well, I've thought about it for ages, and years, but it's kind of been in my head. And the editor at Penguin actually emailed me the day before the Jubilee last year, said, have you ever thought about writing a book? So,
just asked you?
Yeah, and I was, absolutely. So I still had to pitch it. But,
right.
And then, that was all signed off in August and had it written.
How did you pitch it? Do you remember what the pitch was?
Well, basically that, you have to kind of write the first three chapters or whatever it is.
Oh, right.
As a rough draft. And then you got to say, why is this important?
Okay.
Basically, it's important because at the time we knew that we were coming towards the end of the Queen's reign and there was going to be a lot of change. And
right,
opinions were changing. And there weren't really a lot of books out there. And part of my pitch was that this comes from someone who is unapologetically Republican. It's not going to pull any punches. I'm not going to say nice things about the royals. And it is not only talking about what's wrong with the monarchy, but also how we get rid of it and what comes after it. And that hasn't been done before, really.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah,
to think about.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
It's quite odd that it hasn't been done.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are quite a few books about them, sort of Republican books or critical books, but they always sort of pull back at the last minute and say, oh, well, you know, we can't get rid of it. Let's at least reform it or, you know, just tweak it here and there or make it cheaper or whatever. And this is, get rid of it.
I wonder if it is the sort of the grip on power. Things are slightly, people are relaxing a little bit more about talking against them. Like that has actually changed.
I think there was a lot of deference for the Queen as well, wasn't there?
That's what I mean.
And now that she's gone, like I think that people, you were not allowed to say a bad word about the Queen or comment on them.
This is the thing, is that, and part of the argument we've been making since she died is that the Queen, or before she died, really, she was the monarchy.
Yeah,
the monarchy was the Queen. And for an awful lot of people, they never really cared that much about the rest of them. It was her.
Yeah.
And I've had people say, look, you know, I didn't mind because she was there since before I was born. You know, it's just part of the furniture and part of Britain and so on. But when I saw Charles step up and take over, it's like, well, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Who the hell asked you?
The amount of people, I thought it was just me, but the amount of people that when I saw him, you know, when he put the throne on, he just looked so out of place. It looked like a costume.
Yep.
What was it though when they...
they put on this magic robe.
Yeah. And I looked at it, I thought, is it me? Or does he look like he's dressing up in a costume? And then I said to you, and you said, yeah, the moment when he put it on, he just didn't seem to...
The coronation.
Yeah, it just looked odd.
Well, I think I made this point. I think this is quite an important, quite an interesting observation, is that people think about the Queen's coronation, and it's the only one that people really judge anything against because it's the only one we can remember seeing on TV. But it's black and white, grainy footage, and it looks old. It looks the part. And when you see it in high definition, bright color, and he's got this weird purple tunic.
Right,
and
all slightly these weird, too small for it.
all these weird garments.
The crown.
It just looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
I suppose like seeing the difference between sort of footage of World War One and Iraq. You know, seeing that old footage of World War One, you are distance. Everyone, the speed's very strange, and you see people running around.
Yeah,
and the sounds off. It's very grainy, and it's very you're distance from the image.
Yeah.
And you just think, this is in your head. You sort of think this is a long time ago. Even though it's 100 years, over 100 years,
I mean,
it seems like hundreds of years.
And the Queen also connected us in lots of people's minds to that War and to the First World War, all the way back to before the to the Second World War, so and back to before the war, and to the time of Empire and when Britain was supposedly, you know, great and all the rest of it. And you know, Charles doesn't do that. I mean, he's just a bloke in a suit.
Yeah,
and he's someone who's been around for a long time. We know what he thinks. We know what sort of person he is, and most people are just not interested.
I think. Was it you that said that the Queen hadn't been educated, formally educated? She hadn't been to school or more?
Yeah. No, she was educated at home. And when I say educated, I mean the Queen Mother, it was a fairly awful person herself, but she her idea was that she her daughters should be taught how to be proper ladies rather than a serious education. And of course, up until 1936, there was no intention that she would be monarch, so that wasn't considered important to worry about how the constitution works or whatever. So it's very limited.
So where did Charles go to school? Would have been the
he went to Gordonstoun in Scotland, which is a I've got the names. The guy that came up with the Duke of Edinburgh Award and Outward Bound and all that kind of thing created Gordonstoun School, which is where Philip went, which he hated.
Right.
And apparently he was bullied, but and really didn't like.
So were they the first generation to go to school, or was it just the Queen that didn't go to formal school?
I don't know about the others. I mean, I know that I think that...
Maybe they didn't. Maybe
I think that Charles was the first to go formally to school. Yeah.
So everyone before wouldn't have gone to school, or was it just the Queen?
Well, I don't know whether some of them went to Eton before. I don't know.
I think some of the royals might.
Yeah. Some of them might.
Oh, I thought back then they just didn't need to.
But I think with the Queen, it was because she was a woman. And so it was different with
the boys may have gone to Eton, of course. They just weren't educated.
Or at least prep school or something like that. So they might have gone to some form of...
Yeah,
right. You know. I thought it was just their education was just getting ready for the throne. You don't really need to know anything. You don't need to know the details.
They pretend that the King needs to know that... you know, it's important that he understands how it all works, even though he doesn't.
I don't think it gets talked enough. I mentioned we did a podcast on the royal. What was this? The book called
The Spare.
The Spare. Yeah, we did it on the whole show on it. But it doesn't get talked enough about the psychology of what it's like to grow up like that. And it sounds sort of silly to say, but since birth, the roads have always been clear anywhere they've gone.
Yeah,
since birth, and I thought, do they know what traffic is? Like, there's no reason. They're not going to have conversations about it. They've never seen it. What do they think England is? Yeah. Like, I mean, there's always the joke about, you know, the Queen thinks England smells of paint. But if you don't know, and it's been that way.
But I mean, I thought you were being metaphorical then, because the roads are clear in every sense. Because all the obstacles were taken out of their way.
Indeed.
You know, this nonsense recently about Kate staying at home when William went to Singapore because she was helping George with his Eton entry exams. As if Eton is ever going to
turn him down.
Okay, no, sorry, you're not smart.
Yeah, no. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, God, yeah, just yeah. even that. What's the why go through this show, the sham of an exam? Mean,
it was suggested years ago, I don't know what the truth is, it's an old story that I've long forgotten, but it was suggested that Harry's tutor or someone helped him with his work in order to get into university, through the school exam, to go to university. I don't think, did he? I forget now. I don't really care that much about these details, but the point is they go through and get these places regardless. And they're not, I mean, no, it doesn't really matter, but they're not particularly bright people.
Yeah.
And this is one of the odd things about Charles is that he thinks he is a genius and he's got all this wisdom to share with us. He really isn't.
I mean, this is the thing. It's not... I never feel like I'm having a go at one of the royals. It's just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Like, they're not particularly nasty or not particularly special.
Yeah.
So this the way we lay down for it. We'll get into some details about why we don't need them. Is there any, when they go, is there anything that goes with them that you go, look, to be honest, that's going to go. And it's, you know, it is what it is. Like, not nasty, but what good? Because I can't think of anything good that we would lose other than the sort of romance. Is there anything specifically that we would go, yeah, we've got to lose that for the sake of everything else.
Well, I can't think of anything. I mean, in terms of the trappings and the costumes and the soldiers sitting in the horses at Horse Guards Parade, yeah. You can keep all that if you want to.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the romance, I mean, it's a pretty dysfunctional romance, but I mean...
But that would go in a generation anyway.
Well, it is, and to be honest, there isn't any anyway. I mean, the idea that it's a... I mean, people talk about the magic of monarchy. I mean, it's, you know, if you want magic, you know, get the Harry Potter box set, but I mean, it's not... Yeah. It's not.
But it's only there because it's there. If it goes, it won't be there. It's not in the ether. Just.
And they say that we do pomp and ceremony better than everybody else. And I was down at the State Open in Parliament protesting a couple of weeks ago. We don't. I mean, it's really boring and really weird and incredibly dated. And inside the building, where I mean, this is a state opening of our parliament.
Yeah.
The people are well away from it. All the barriers are up. You can't go anywhere near parliament on that day. It's very much... You know, the emphasis being on the state. And the images are of lots of people in robes. You know, it's the state, the images of all the unelected people, all these sort of grey old men wearing strange outfits, one of them holding a stick with a hat on them, which gets the cap of something or other.
Yeah.
Another one holding a sword, and all these page boys who you just assume all go to eat.
Yeah.
And looking at them on the front row is all the lords with all their finery, appointed, not elected.
I can't remember which event it was, but it was in the last few years, and everybody was turning up. But the problem was, because it was in London, that the shot that they had of everybody turning up, you had Five Guys burgers in the back, and it was just the image of just all these weird people in the clothing, and they're getting old, so they don't fit the robes anymore. The robes aren't getting made
tatty looking,
so all these old people that are opening the doors for people and walking them up that have been doing it for 60 years, suddenly everybody had shrunk, but the clothing and the hats hadn't, and it just had Five Guys burger in the back, which, you know, they buffed that sign up just before. But I just looked, I thought, that's a world imposed on another world.
Yeah.
Like they're turning up and just gliding through.
Yeah.
But in the book, what one thing? Sorry, in the what was the book called?
The Spare.
The Spare. We spoke about with Harry. He talks about that he's never seen anybody hug, no affection whatsoever. Like never seen any.
Wow.
He talks about the famous photograph of when the Queen Mother Charles is sent off to boarding school when he comes back.
Yep.
And he gets off the train and the Queen's shaking his hand. He said, I've never seen anybody hug anything. And he talks about the event where the Queen's husband died. And he said, I saw her there, sat there, like, and everybody around. And he said, I thought about doing the unthinkable and hugging her, like the unthinkable sort of language.
Yeah.
He said, when he was told by Prince Charles that, like, Diana had died, he came into the bedroom. He always called him dear boy. He said, he just put his hand on my knee and told me. And then to the left.
Yep.
That was it. That's as much as you get. He said, I've never seen any of them hug anybody else. Never.
Which is really weird.
Because he says, everything you see in public is exactly the same in private. The conversation that it's sterile in the background.
Because, I mean, it is a dysfunctional family. And I think the interesting thing about Harry is that he's an insider telling us that what we thought about them is true.
Yeah.
And that, and to be honest, I mean, a lot of people do say this, that get rid of the monarchy for their sake as much as anything, because you shouldn't live in a world like that.
Yeah.
It's very weird. Oh. It's a very strange place to live in. And the fact that Charles is this strange, eccentric, dysfunctional person who has a wildly overinflated sense of his own greatness is because he's come up in this weird world, being told from a young age that he's going to be king. And it's been said, I mean, I don't know, I don't want to get too much into George, but it was reported the other day that he sort of would say to kids at school, oh, well, you know, you've got to behave yourself because I'm going to be king one day. And that is pretty... I mean, I don't know how serious he said it, but I mean, you would imagine it's quite sort of sincerely said by an 8-year-old. But also the fact that he then says it and it goes into the national papers. So at the age of 8, what he says to kids at school gets printed in the press.
Jesus.
You know, you shouldn't have to live up, grow up in that world.
My dad's bigger than your dad. Well, my dad's got an army.
Yeah. It was funny listening to Harry. Because he wasn't particularly interested in it. He was just a black sheep of the family. It's just every generation, somebody's born that just doesn't fit.
Yeah.
You know, and only because of empathy and just somebody that's naturally empathetic in this sterile world. And he talks about being in class and they're talking about like the wars and the royals and all that. And it's literally, but he had no interest, and he would get in trouble with by the teacher saying, listen, we're actually having conversations about your family here. And he got him, ironically, there was a thing called, because he didn't know about the timelines. He just didn't have any interest in the royal family. It just wasn't his thing. He's, but he got him a thing called the ruler, and it had all the royals, the ruler.
The kings.
Yeah, queens, he said, because he wouldn't learn. So you had to give him this route to show, look, this is, but he used to say to him in the class, look, we're having, he took him aside and said, we're having, this is your family. Maybe you should show
them. They're not intellectually curious people, and none of them are, and they're not taught to be. They aren't raised to be. And when you say things and everyone sort of nods along and goes, yes, sir, of course, from a young age, why would you then think that you have to go and learn something?
Yeah.
It's when you're told you're being an idiot that you think, well, maybe I should read something and, inform myself.
The Spare book, and we'll get onto your book now, but the book Spare,
it's... Same publisher, by the way.
Oh, is it really? Okay. See if I'm taking a risk now. I wasn't interested. I forced myself to listen to it only because, the audiobook, only because it just kept, everyone kept attacking him specifically. I thought, if everybody's attacking somebody for seemingly no reason, you should probably listen to that book.
Yeah.
And I looked into the comments of the audiobook, and it was just pure hate, and which I assumed must have been just fake comments, because everyone, there's no middle ground.
Probably not verified purchases.
Yeah, because why would you buy a book on somebody's life and go, he's an idiot, he doesn't know what he's taught. I thought, that's a strange... Because when you listen to the book, but it's fine.
It was all to do with the fact that he was critical of the monarchy. And if he if he was saying something critical about something completely different, then it would be very different. And they didn't want to know. They didn't want to listen.
Yeah.
And you see this with royalist commentators who were celebrating the fact that Harry and Meghan were getting married. And then 2 years later were leading the charge against them and condemning them as if they'd committed some hateful crime. And they put so much energy into attacking Harry and Meghan, who had done nothing other than tell what they saw as the truth about this dysfunctional family. And how much time did they then spend attacking Andrew, who was, facing very serious criminal accusations?
I think it was you that actually said there. Yeah, it was. You said that, and I thought, oh yeah, that's perfect. They're not there to protect the country. They're there to protect the monarchy.
Yeah.
And you still have to go, the country's there, but it's secondary. The main thing is to keep that business in place.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the problems Harry had was like the way he was being treated by the press. But the royal family were actually on the press's side saying, look, you've got to let them do their thing to us, because then they let us do our thing.
Yeah, it's a trade.
And it's like, and he's like, well, this, they're attacking me and about this, and that's personal stuff. And
but also they would, according to Harry, and it certainly stacks up, they would allow them to get away with a lot more with Harry in order to deflect attention away from William,
because
William was the one in line to the throne. He said that, he was always told that he was less important than his brother.
Yeah. Well, he was literally told, you're the spare. They used that word. That's why you can't travel together on planes and things.
You're the backup. Okay.
Yeah. But they said, he was explained to him, I think he was 13, they said, you might need a kidney. He said, but they just used that. There was no irony. You're needed in case that. Yeah. But I say you've got to listen to it, because you'll never hear that again in our lifetime, where somebody that's lived that life as close to God as you can, who's now been completely honest. Yeah. Not even nasty. That's the other thing. There's no nastiness in it. I was waiting for it.
No, but this is it. I mean, people were so... They're so quick to defend the royals. They don't sit back and think, well, he's not actually attacking them so much as to saying what he thinks happened. And, the fact that he talked about his brother, getting him into a fight and pushing him and whatever.
Yeah.
It wasn't really, sort of saying, oh, hey, my brother, because he's old. He's just saying this happened. And, of course it happened.
Yeah, but just to highlight the fact that if you deviate from that thing, you are the enemy. That's what it is.
Reading your book, it was, the secrecy and the sort of, not even privacy, I would say secrecy, because they are ostensibly, heads of the government or whatever, His Majesty's government. And I don't think you're really allowed, you shouldn't really be allowed to have that position and also say, oh yeah, plus you're not allowed to know anything about what I get up to.
No, absolutely.
You can't have your cake and eat it too.
Well, didn't she implement that law that said you can basically, you can't look at our financial system. I think it was like 20 years ago she put in.
Well, yeah, 40 years ago, the Labour government were introducing legislation to improve transparency of financial transactions and things like, you know, buying stocks and shares and whatever, investments in other companies and so on. And she asked and got an exemption so that we couldn't see what her financial arrangement
was. If you just said that about anybody else, you go, well, that doesn't make sense. No, it was like we said before, the RSPCA used to be the SPCA, and then they got the royal warrant, you know, probably about 40 years ago. Right. So then that meant they were allowed in anywhere with the royal protection behind them. And but the only place the RSPCA can't go is any royal grounds.
Yep. Yeah, I know. And they have been on more than one occasion accused of killing animals that they shouldn't, that would have protected, including Harry was accused of shooting a rare harrier. Oh. But, and they can't do anything about it.
There's a bit I've mentioned in The Spare where they shoot the deer, and it's just this old guy who's been doing shit, the royal hunter for like 80 years, and Harry goes with him, and they get on their knees because it's the first shot, like it's supposed to be a ritual thing, the first time he shoots and he kills it and he goes over this. He said this old guy just seemed like a million years old, and he said we got onto our knees, and he said I thought we were going to pray, and he said he gutted the animal and then pushed my head inside its stomach and held it there. And when he came out, he said I couldn't breathe. He said, but the guy was so strong, I couldn't get out. And he said, when I came out, I was trying to wipe blood. He said, no lad, he was Scottish, no lad, you got to leave it. I thought, this isn't a normal. No. Do that in a council estate.
Yeah, I know. This is
hold a kid's head in a gut.
A dead cat.
Why wasn't that the headline news? Weird.
That is cultish. So the book. Now you say it, there's not a lot. God, there's not many other things. I can't even remember seeing another book that was like yours.
I mean, Norman Baker, the former Lib Dem MP, wrote And What Do You Do?
It's
a good book, but he sort of towards the end says, well, you know, if we can't get rid of it, at least slim it down. It's like, let's talk about getting rid of it and not any of this kind
of. If there's anything left, then we'll talk about if they did go, another, you know, generation in front of us got a bit slightly more balls than we have, and they do go, what it would be the transition? What would happen? Would it just be a law? How would it actually work?
Well, it's not particularly complicated. I mean, we saw Barbados do it 2 years ago. And now the only difference is that we have the monarchy sitting here in London.
But, yeah.
The change of the constitution takes a piece of legislation, because Parliament can change anything it wants.
Right.
You would have a referendum, because I think politically you couldn't do this without a referendum. And you would say, look, do you want to become a republic? And if so, is this model appropriate?
Yeah.
And the model being, you know, a parliamentary system like we have now. So you write down a constitution, have a fully elected upper house, and you have an elected head of state. So and once that's agreed, it's simply a matter of setting dates. You know, you have a date for an election of the head of the state.
Right, okay, yeah.
And then you have a date for the prorogation of the new constitution, at which point the head of state becomes head of state, and King Charles moves out of the house.
So it's really the politicians, it's the people, whether the politicians want to do it, and then it's just the people have to make the politicians want to do it.
Yeah,
and the politicians have to.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think that in the quite a lot of time, people think that we have to persuade the politicians that this is a good idea.
Yeah.
And really, we have to persuade the politicians that it's in their interest to allow us the vote, and then we win the vote. And you may well have a Labour government in the future that goes, fine, we'll have a republic. We think that's a policy thing that we're going to put on there. Manifesto, but it's more likely that we're going to at least get it to the point where the parties go, look, clearly there's a need for a vote, so we'll have a vote. And you saw this with David Cameron. He gave us three referendums. He didn't want any of them, but he was put in a position where he felt that it was appropriate to do that. So we got electoral reform because of the Lib Dems. We got a Scottish referendum because of the SNP, and then because of his own right wing, we got the Brexit referendum.
Yeah.
And you've seen this in other countries, places like New Zealand, where they had electoral reform against the wishes of both main parties.
Right.
And the people in New Zealand voted for electoral reform against the wishes of both main parties.
That's the process.
That's the process. And so, which is why our strategy is all about public opinion.
Right.
And that is, you know, we're starting to see public opinion move quite dramatically. I mean, there was one poll that put it down to 55% in favour and one poll that put us up at 32%.
Yeah.
Now, typically it's slightly further apart, sort of 27-60, but that is 20 points down from where it was in 2012 at the time of the Jubilee.
Yeah.
I think younger people are showing at least more indifference towards the entire
And hostility. I mean, the polling among under 30s, but people say, you know, it's young people, but actually polling for the under 40s shows the number of people for the monarchy is in the minority.
Yeah.
And some polling for the under 50s shows that. So it's very much, if you look at the whole spread of the demographic spread of the UK-wide poll, it's the retired people that are keeping the numbers over 50%. There's research now that people are not getting more conservative as they get older, as they used to.
Yeah.
And part of that is because people have become, if you think that you're 21 leaving university now, most of your life from 2008 onwards, you've had the economic crash, you've had austerity, you've had you know, conservative government for most of that time with cost of living crisis and compounded by lockdown and COVID, and then the more recent crisis where everything seems to be in crisis.
Yeah.
And so people are feeling, well, no, I don't want to become more conservative. Yeah. I want a stake in this. Yeah, well, I don't have a stake in
it. We've got less to be conservative about. But I think, there's multiple things happening. I think the Queen going was the big thing. Yeah. She took something with her then, that person that's always been there.
My family always said, well, you know, the Queen's done a lot. And I always said, well, like what?
She
was there during the war.
Yeah.
And I was
stoic.
Like,
what do you mean stoic?
Lots of people
were there during the war.
Yeah, I was like, cool. She
lived at the front with a gun in their hand.
She was alive during the war. She's like 14 or 15, isn't she, during the war? Cool. Okay, good on her. But
The term stoic, I was like, well, that means you didn't do anything. Like, what you did, it's being, doing nothing isn't something of to be looked
at. Basically, she did. I mean, the one thing, the two things she did, she saved the monarchy from itself, and she
well done.
feathered their nest very well. They were better off at the end of her reign than they were at the start, and they had better terms. And they
she did what she was supposed to do. She kept the monarchy going.
She protected their finances. Yeah. She kept them prying eyes out, and was our first defense.
So there's multiple. Like I said, the Queen going is a big thing. Secondly, people have got less to be conservative about. We own less because they've mismanaged the country. But also even a little thing, like this is a generation that has a lot more celebrities. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot more other people to be interested in than the royals. So I think all these things coming together.
Well, a friend of mine is saying it's quite an interesting thought going way back to sort of Victoria's time. You didn't have TV and radio. And for an awful lot of people, life was pretty crappy.
Yeah.
And if you lived in a small town in the Midlands or something, and all you did is get up in the morning and go to work and come back late in the evening, then there wasn't a whole lot of excitement in your life. So a royal suddenly turning up or reading something about the royals or hearing gossip about the royals was kind of interesting. But like you said, now we've got not just endless amounts of celebrity and we've got endless amounts of news, we've got endless amounts of content online. We don't need them.
Yeah.
And as we were saying before, when you look at them in high def and you sort of in full colour and you see them dressing up, you think, what the hell is this about?
Yeah.
And I spoke to a senior person in the BBC not that long ago who said, oh, did you see the coronation? And I thought he was going to say, well, wasn't it wonderful? And he just said, wasn't it weird?
Yeah.
Because it was very strange.
Yeah.
It was. And even my dear old mum, who doesn't have all the tea towels and can't get out the bunting, but he's fairly like, oh, well, they do an okay job, but they're not bad people, he's fairly kind of positive-ish. Even she, I sat and watched the whole damn thing, all whatever, 8 hours of it. I watched it with her. And even she was just like, what the hell is this? Like, what is this? And there are a couple of times we were both like, just got the giggles. Like, cause we were just, when people were putting, people came out with like, looking like, playing cards. They had all these dudes and the soldiers and they looked like off with their heads, like should be in the background of that.
For years, they said, it's going to be very different. It's going to be more in tune with the times and they're going to have different faiths involved and all the rest of it. And they said all this thing about, covering him to do the anointing of the oil. They won't do that. And when it came around to it, he did it. I mean, if anything, he was more conservative and went backwards in just digging his heels and saying, no, I want everything that previous.
I don't think they can change. I think it's so ingrained that the will's there, but they just can't.
He's a deeply, deeply conservative man, and he believes in the monarchy, and he believes in his divine right to be king. And he believes that he believes he's got this sort of messianic complex where he's been put on the earth to save us from ourselves.
Yeah.
Mon Dieu et mon droit? Et mon droit?
No, I don't know that.
Yeah. I don't know.
God of my right?
No, God of my right.
But the Queen in the last few years, when the state opening of Parliament, went by car. And Charles starts doing it, and he goes by coach. And I haven't checked actually, but someone said that the guy, when he goes in, was walking backwards. I need to check that, but they stopped doing that 25 years ago. So if that's true, then he's literally going backwards in reversing all these very, very minor reforms.
But I was going to say, yes, I think the world is changing, and it is, there is this pace of that change is progressing quite, faster and faster, it seems, even when I was a kid. And they've adamantly stayed still.
Yeah.
And they've adamantly just gone, you know what? I mean, it's like we all do this, you think, well, okay, there's some point in a person's life where they go, you know what? I'm going to press the pause button. I'm going to keep the same haircut. I'm going to keep basically the same fashion style, music and stuff. Which this is me from now on. You know what I mean?
But it's not going to work for them. They're going to be left high and dry. And people now say, oh, William's going to do it differently. He's going to be the modern face of the monarchy. I mean, they just keep on going around in circles.
Yeah.
In the 1970s, they said Charles is going to be different. He's going to be the modern face of the monarchy. Yeah. And William's going to be 60 before he gets to be king, and he's going to be the same as his dad, repeating the same nonsense if we don't get rid of it before then. I think that, there is a perfect storm going on here that is going to cause them a lot of trouble. There's all of the issues, the social issues that are causing people to lose interest. There's just general loss of interest. Yeah. There's the fact that it's now very easy to talk about this issue without getting attacked. Yeah. The Queen is gone, and now we also have the whole issue of reparations, greater awareness of slavery and colonialism and empire, which is driving a massive wedge between the monarchy and younger people, but also the monarchy and people around the Commonwealth. So everything, and then you've got Andrew, and then you've got Harry. It's all sort of coming together to create this environment in which people just think, well, do we really like these people? Do we really want to put up?
Well, I said
before. And they're very unbending, I should say.
Yes,
That's
the thing.
Yeah.
That don't bend.
Yeah, precisely. Because, I mean, a cleverer person, a sort of wiser person, someone a bit more acumen or whatever to them, would think, okay, well, we have to keep up with it. We have to make ourselves relevant. Mm. Because ultimately, dressing up in our fancy clothes and making everyone bow to us all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That eventually, on a long enough time scale, that people,
what William's trying to do, talking about being a social leader. And he's just, I mean, the other day there's a tweet from someone saying that he's now talking about, I can't remember what it was now, some other issue anyway. He's just basically got a little list. He's just adding issues, social issues to this list. And he's going to be a leader on this issue. He's got no understanding of these issues. Yeah. He gets told things to say about the environment or homelessness or whatever. Trots out every now and again and does something, and wants plaudits for it. And it's all about trying to be relevant. But people don't really. I mean, I see responses online, and I appreciate it. Social media is not everything, but it is indicative of something. And even on things like the BBC news feed, when they report things like William's homelessness work, there's huge amounts of hostility because people say, "Well, he's sitting on big houses and he's taking millions of pounds. Why is he lecturing us on homelessness?" Which is a political issue which can be resolved with a change of government, not by William patronising people.
Well, if you go to Windsor, the place is surrounded by homeless people.
Well, indeed.
And 100 foot from the 100 foot walls is people
who are then cleared off the street when they have a big wedding. Yeah. So
it is, I've said this before, when you go to Windsor and you're sitting in the restaurant looking up at this gargantuan wall, I said to you before, I saw a little light go on, and it just humanised the fact that there's people in there.
Yeah, yeah.
That was just like...
Sort of going to the loo somewhere.
Yeah, I just thought, oh, there's
a bit of a ghost town now, because the Queen living there, but Charles doesn't, so there's not really many people there anymore.
Well, we spoke on the other, I had no idea about the land they owned. I knew they owned a ridiculous amount of land, but when you actually tallied it up, it was, I think, it was what's the Scotland one?
You rattled through the stats, and they were... Yeah.
It was like 50,000 acres, and a football pitch is 2 acres, so it's 25,000 football pitches, and then it was half that for like Sandringham, and then the same. And Windsor, I remember seeing Windsor had 1,000 rooms and 300 fireplaces, and I thought, This is
most people in London don't have a garden.
And the Duchy of Cornwall is, you know, sort of equivalent of the size of Edinburgh, for example.
Yeah,
like that. So it, all the land there, and
offensive levels, like ungodly amounts of land.
And the problem is, I mean, there's a big campaign to get rid of leasehold and to reform you know, the whole freehold leasehold thing and get rid of it so that people can own their own property. It's really hit the buffers, and it's, nothing's happening with it. And I suspect that there is a lot of pressure from the royals because they are massive landowners and they get a huge amount of their wealth from charging leasehold rents. If they reform leasehold, they can get an exemption. If they get rid of it, then they're a bit stuck. So they're going to lose all that income. So these things matter. If they, when they have direct access to all ministers, they've got complete secrecy around the lobbying they're doing. They've got leverage in terms of making things awkward for the government. And they are landowners, they are property developers, they are employers. You know, there's all sorts of...
But just, as you said, not bending the world, just crippling around this massive family that's got this big thing. Yeah. I remember there was a... you might not know this, but in the nightclub industry in the last 20 years, you don't anymore get long-term nightclub managers that stay there for like 30, 40 years.
Right.
What they do is they move people around constantly for like 6 months. You have a bar manager, a manager of a bar, and they move them in 6 months. And they do that because they realized the longer you're in a job, you start to make connections with people. Now you know the delivery driver. Now you're mates with him. Now you know the barman. You've been there 2, 4, 5 years. And you start going, oh, well, if you do that, I'll do that. And you know, so they know, no, we've got to keep everybody moving.
Right.
So you think about the royal family and just the spider's web at every level, the whole way down of things you don't know that go on.
But in public... institutions, the whole point of democracy is that we can see what they're doing and replace them regularly. And we replace them regularly whether we necessarily support them or not. I mean, people do rotate. And this is why, in the US they have term limits, because they don't think it's healthy to have someone in even if you want to vote for them for a third term. In fact, they did this voluntarily up until 1945. And the presidents are like, I don't think it's a good idea to stick around for another term, or the voters decided that for them.
I would give them their dues. I thought when Meghan came along, I thought, oh, they're going to jump on this. You know, it'll be hollow, but they'll jump on it and it will change. Yeah. But the fact they just couldn't do it.
It's really telling.
Wow, you're cutting your own throat here. You really are.
They cannot change. Yeah. And they cannot. I mean, the point is that it was said about the Queen that everything had to be the same all the time. And the fact that, you know, there's that anecdote that she was being told by Harry on the way to meet the Queen about curtsying.
Mm.
And to begin with, she thought he was joking. And it's like, no, you've got to curtsy to my grandmother. It's like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah,
it's just weird. And like you said, other people, you know, you take your new girlfriend to meet your grandmother and you get a hug and a cup of tea.
The shock no, this isn't a joke.
We said this, and I assume that she probably thought it would be like, oh, we're going to meet George Clooney.
Yeah.
In that you meet him in a formal sense and you go, oh, hi, George. And he goes, oh, hi, cool, And he's a bit sort of formal and stuffy because the cameras are there. But you get him around the back room and he's, you know, probably quite quite chilled and relaxed.
Nope.
He's like, ah, cool. And they have a couple of cocktails, you know, have a chat, and he loosens up a bit.
Yep.
But and I'm assuming that she thought, okay, we're going to have a private audience, so that they'll be like, oh, hi, cool, how you doing? Bit more private face. And then goes in and it's terribly formal, even when it's only them. Yeah. You know,
can imagine her looking around to see, are we still being filmed? You go, no, this is...
Someone's telling me they're in the Scottish coronation thing at the church. I think it was their wife that was in there. And when they all stood up at the end and Charles left, all these people sort of, you know, bowing like this. And she just stood there smiling at them. And he just kind of looked at her like, what's going on? Yeah. This doesn't compute. Why is this person's head not moving?
Yeah.
You know, it's just really odd. They expect all this all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is why he looks very, very annoyed when I'm shouting things at him on the megaphone.
There was just one more thing. It was talking about how silly it all looked. I remember the, I think I just got a TV. It's like a few years ago. And I saw the golden carriage come out. But I could see the places in London where it was. Like, obviously, the streets have been cleared. But seeing it, I thought, that's a golden carriage.
Yeah.
They're not irony.
Yeah.
You go, do you know what, do you, you know what year you're in?
Yeah.
But to have it without irony, a golden horse-drawn carriage,
yeah,
a fairy tale in central London,
yeah,
with congestion charges and poverty. And you go, maybe we should stick this in the museum.
Yeah.
Don't take that out the road.
I mean, this is what they did last, was it last week or the week before, for the state opening. The gold carriage came out again. More than one carriage, because the first carriage comes along and all it's got in it is two old men in red uniforms and the crown.
Yes.
So the crown,
is it?
Which is our constitution. I mean, the centre of our constitution is a hat. And so they put this hat in its own carriage and they
all
take it to Parliament.
The hat,
It is that kind of weird thing, isn't it? It's all about the
hat. It's got
hat,
its own transport.
Plus, and then, plus three intelligence, plus two deception. You know,
and then another carriage. I think Anne had a carriage as well. I didn't know Andrew, but although a police van went past, maybe he was in that. But then there's a carriage with Charles in it. And, I mean, you probably saw the great photo of from the other side of him going past and perfectly framed in the window as our placard saying, "Not my king."
Oh, okay.
And surrounded by placards and flags and things of bright yellow. But and an American friend of mine came down to sort of join in and see what it's all about. And he's just, again, it's just so weird. Can you imagine people in other countries saying, "Well, I'm going to come to your parliament, but I will do it in a gold coach."
Yeah.
And that was the thing, is some of the reaction online. You know, again, this is me watching a lot of lefty types on YouTube, social media and stuff. But it wasn't this kind of deference to the ceremony and, you know, the grandeur of it all. It was just like, what?
Yeah.
What?
We assume you're all having fun. You go, this isn't fun.
Do you guys think this is normal? Yeah. I'm like, no, we don't think this is normal either. Yeah. It's like, well, who's this for then?
Yeah.
Why?
Harry used to talk.
Well, some conservative monarchist said on Twitter, you know, "Oh, it's been going on for hundreds of years, so yes, it is normal." I just said, "Well, regular is not the same as normal."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They were still doing weird all these years later.
Harry was talking about that every morning Charles would have the newspapers brought in on a silver platter.
Yeah.
And I thought, God,
what's his name? Paul Burrell, the butler to Diana. He is interviewed on various occasions talking about life in the household, and he'd want his shoelaces ironed, and the whole thing about squeezing out the toothpaste, so that when he gets the sink, the toothbrush is sitting there with the toothpaste on it.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah,
and if you don't do something quite right, and you iron the newspapers and all that kind of stuff, so it's all nice and flat and perfect. You know, there's no creases in his world.
Yeah.
And if anything wasn't quite right, then he, you know, throw a fit and get angry with everybody. You know, everybody.
What was the thing about the pen? Do you remember there was a video?
Oh, yeah.
Two things with the pen.
What was it?
No, Pengate. I mean, he'd just become king.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Which he'd been waiting for a very long time.
Yeah.
And the pen, it was, you know, obviously a very posh fountain pen.
Yeah.
With ink and whatever. And it was linking. And he got mad with it. Oh, that was the second one, the one in Northern Ireland, I think. The first one was just because they were sitting there in this fancy pen holder.
Yeah.
And it just felt to him like it was in the
That was it, right, yeah.
Yeah, it was in the...
Is there somebody to collect this thing?
Yeah, and he was sort of... he was really wound up.
I remember...
That was a little window into...
Yeah, court.
That through the keyhole into the private room, and I thought...
This is one of the points I make about... Because some people say, look, you know, it's not about the people, it's not about the personalities, it's about the issue, the principles, whatever. But part of the argument is that you would not elect Charles if he stood in a free and fair election. You would not vote for him. You'd be lucky to get 10%.
Yeah.
Because he, you know, if you have an election, you have to go into debates, you have to answer interview questions.
Yeah.
And you imagine him sitting here in this chair talking to you two. The moment you question anything, he'd be out the door.
Do a Trump.
Yeah. If you say to him, if he's standing in the studio with five other candidates, and one of them says to him, "Well, why have you not been paying inheritance tax?" He'd be gone.
Yeah.
He's like, no.
Yeah, you wouldn't even get that far.
You'd have a list of questions you're not supposed to, debate questions.
It'll be very short debate.
Yes.
Yeah. But he wouldn't talk to you. He would just walk away.
Yeah.
Because that's what he does. And there was someone that, it was an anecdote told by Richard Dawkins when there was another very prominent, eminent scientist in Oxford, I think it was. And this is going back, you know, quite a long time, 20 years or something. And Charles turns up, and the week before he'd made a speech about something or other, Charles had about the environment. And this guy said, when he was introduced, "Oh, you know, it's a very interesting speech, but I slightly disagree on one or two things." And Charles didn't say a word. He just turned and walked off. And his flunky you lent in and said, one does not disagree with his Royal Highness. And that's the world he lives in, where he doesn't have to answer these questions.
The comedian Frank Skinner got his OBE a couple of years ago, and he was talking about it. He said, which he said, he's only a comedian, shouldn't really do these things, but solid, you know, he's older now.
Yeah.
He said he was told, like, when you come up, he was the Queen at the time, when you come up to collect it, you are not allowed, and he said this was serious, you were not allowed to walk fast or make any quick movements. Yep. He said, what would happen if I did? He said, they'll tackle you. He said, they're not messing about. You have to walk slowly towards her. Any hand movements have to be very slow. And he said, it was a funny thing. He said, you know, when I walked in, you're told like where to walk and how to do things. And he said, you know, when they'd have like in museums, they have like the battle armor hanging up on the walls. He said, this had people in them. As he went into them, there were actually people stood in these things. But anyway, so
weird.
That's all the laughter is. So what have you been doing? Oh, I appreciate the fact that you charged Charles with a crime.
Yeah.
Can you just explain what happened?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I should have done it a second time that year, actually. But there was the Sunday Times have been doing a lot of investigation into him. And one of the stories they came up with was this letter that they got hold of from Michael Fawcett, who is has been for years Charles's closest aide and confidant. And he resigned some years ago from Charles's direct employment for some other row about something or other. But then he was made CEO of one of the charities that Charles runs or set up. And this letter was to somewhere, a Saudi businessman, saying, we will help you with getting a knighthood. I think he already had one. And you know, there's a whole load of bunch of ranks of knighthood. So he's sort of getting another one further up the ranks. So we'll help you with this. And to be clear, this is to help to as your appreciation for the donation you've given us. And offering honours in exchange for any kind of consideration is a criminal offence. So I reported them to the police. And it took 2 years for the police to decide to do nothing about it.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of foot dragging. There was a bit of backwards and forwards. They said they sent it off to the CPS. The CPS said they sent it back and blah, blah, blah. And they said at one point they said they'd interviewed two men. And you know, they always say, you know, a man in his 50s or whatever. And this is a man in his 40s and the man in his 50s. So not Charles. So, they didn't even bother to interview him as a witness, let alone a suspect, which is, he should be, because he was the one reported along with Michael Fawcett. And they just didn't want to.
I heard the Royal Protection Officer talking about the ramming of the gates by Andrew. Can you just say what happened there?
Yeah, I mean, that was going back a few years now. And again, I reported Andrew, and in what I dubbed Gate.
Someone
gate.
Needs to, yeah.
Yeah, Gate. Yeah. Gate, yeah.
So, I mean, basically, again, he's got this large Range Rover, and he goes to Windsor Great Park, and the big gates are supposed to automatically open in front of him, and they didn't. So rather than make a call or, you know, ask someone to come and sort it out, he just rammed them in a fit of pique. And someone witnessed it, and it was in the Sun, saying, you know, Andrew apparently rammed these gates. I thought, well, he doesn't own those gates.
Yeah.
So that's criminal damage. So I reported them to the police, and that was Thames Valley Police. And that I mentioned that in the press, and it just kept the story going for another 24 hours. But but again, the police didn't want to know. They just said they said something like, you know, we don't get involved in traffic accidents where there's no injury or fatality. It's not a traffic accident, it's criminal damage.
And it was like £50,000-£60,000.
£80,000.
And also, they would if you were ramming a bus stop, smashing up a bus stop.
If I went down there the next day and rammed
just to see what happens,
they would have arrested me.
And I mean, honestly, you could have probably got some newspaper or something to say, listen, cover my legal fees and everything that come, put it on paper. Yeah. I'm going to take my car now and I'm going to belt it.
Yeah.
I just see what happens.
But absolutely. And because the gates belong to the Crown Estate, and the Crown Estate didn't want that.
Yeah.
So, well, you're a public body that is supposed to raise money for the Treasury.
Yeah.
You should be worrying about the fact that he's just cost you 80,000 quid.
Yeah.
You know, and I suspect the Queen probably, you know, put her hand in the pocket, but if they bother to ask.
Rummaged around in her purse for a couple of loose £80,000 notes.
She's probably got £80,000 notes.
That's all. But back to the book. I think, I really enjoyed reading it. I think it lays out a very sort of clear and very methodical approach to the argument and possible counter arguments that can be deployed against it. as well as, but it's not just a critique. It is also lays out a blueprint moving forward, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, it's the first, it's not a rant of.
Yes. Yeah. Because, I mean, we have a bit of fun and we point at people's weird sausage fingers and their weird coats and their odd,
but now what?
Their odd brothers and stuff. And but there is a sort of, you know, there is a deeper issue. And I do think, and I agree completely with, don't mean to be, you know, get that slappy too much, but I did agree with everything in the book. And I was just, you know, and what I dislike, I suppose, the most is it solidifies an undemocratic and sort of class stratification within our political system.
Yep.
And that's what I really dislike, is that it literally enshrines that.
Yeah.
This kind of, you know, this upper middle class, this Downton Abbey, upstairs, downstairs.
Which I think
kind
has a much wider impact than people necessarily appreciate. And one of the things we're trying to do at the moment with Republic is to say, to connect it to all these other issues and say, look, all this is kind of connected. Join the dots. If you're not happy with the way we're governed, if you're not happy with the political system or the outcomes of our political system, have a look at the monarchy, because it is right at the center of all this. The crown is the source of so much power that is in the hands of government. The monarchy sustains this whole culture, which our current government is so representative of, this really Eton heavy, billionaire heavy, you know, snobbish culture that thinks that they should cut welfare in order to fund inheritance tax cuts. And so they doesn't occur to them that it might be wrong for Charles to pay no inheritance tax, because that's the world they all live in.
Yeah.
And they all grow up in this kind of weird environment where, you know, when you think that 7% of the country go to private school, we are governed, being governed by the 7% on behalf of the 1%, and the other 90% don't really get much of a look in and aren't properly represented. And the monarchy is absolutely at the heart of it. So, and one of the things I say in the book is that it makes everything more democratic. It also makes our culture more democratic.
Yeah.
And we take those ideas seriously. And whilst it won't solve all our problems, it makes solving our problems so much easier if the levers of power in the hands of more people.
Mm. What's the final word on money in, money out for the royals? Like, what is it?
Oh, huge cost and no return.
Yeah, because there's always the tourism thing.
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't disappear. The tourism thing will still be there. The money.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that I try and say often these days is that it doesn't matter, because we don't, you know, I don't care. You could say it brings in £20 billion for tourism, and I still say get rid of it, because it's not about the tourism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we shouldn't, it's amoral to say, well, regardless of the rights and wrongs of the monarchy, we're going to keep it because it makes money. But it doesn't make money. And there's no evidence of it at all. And, you know, we had a meeting with Visit Britain back in 2012, I think it was, with their chair and CEO, because we released stuff we got from them through freedom of information requests, which challenged their claims about the impact of the wedding the previous year. And in that meeting, I said, look, you know, there's no evidence that if we get rid of the monarchy, tourism would go down. And I said, no, of course there isn't. And they still haven't come up with any, and there's no reason why there should be any. And the only figure they came up with is £500 million a year, which is, in the scheme of the economy, is like 0.001% GDP. It's a tiny little amount of money compared to the wider economy, and even compared to the tourism economy.
Yeah.
So it just isn't a factor.
And as I said, even if it was, it's not the bigger issue here. No. It's just part of the issue.
No. Well, I think it's a silly argument, because I think that, well, very few people will come to a place because there's Buckingham Palace. Oh, yeah. I really want to travel to England or Britain or whatever and see Buckingham Palace and see Windsor Castle. People will travel to this country and then go, right, what's there to see? Okay, then we go on the list. Whenever I travel places, you know, I go, right, okay, I'm going France. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Right, what's there to see in Paris? Okay, cool. Right,
I've been to the Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg years ago, and I've been to the Forbidden City in Beijing, and I've been to Versailles. And these are all started life as royal palaces. And I wasn't going around thinking, what a damn shame the royal palace is. It doesn't matter. It's not an issue.
And nobody's saying pull the Buckingham Palace down. I mean, you mentioned before about just turn it into a museum. I'd go and have a look.
If it was me, I would close the road between the palace and Green Park. I would close the Mall, and I'd close the road on the other side of St. James Park and just turn the whole lot into an open space, open up all the gates, open up the garden, and be able to go all the way through. And, I mean, I start the book by talking about the fact that I took my nephews to Buckingham Palace. It is a dreadful tourist experience as at the moment, because it doesn't tell you anything.
Yeah,
it tells you how many cups and saucers they have, yeah, and the amazing revelation that the dining room is used to entertain guests, yeah, which I kind of probably worked out, yeah, myself. But it tells you no history.
Yeah.
The only art of any interest is in one room, and all the other art is sort of, you know, dead uncles of the family. Yeah. And there's a video, actually. It's a very funny video. I can't remember the guy's name, but he does sort of various history videos and things. And he did a review, or it's on YouTube channel, and he did a review of him and his wife going to Buckingham Palace as tourists. And he did it solely because he went there thinking it was going to be really interesting, and was absolutely horrified about how bad it was. Even down to the fact that the way the staff talk to you, you're not allowed to have your rucksack on your, yeah, you know, your backpack on your arm. You've got to carry it.
Yeah.
You've got to.
Why have you not can't put it on your? Why can't you put it on your shoulder?
I don't know. I assume to knock things or.
Oh, whatever. Right, okay.
I don't know. But, yeah, but
looks slovenly.
No,
I think
they
it just looks bad. Yeah.
They herd you through. Right. They keep you moving. There's, yeah, no toilets. There's barely any information anywhere. The cafe is, yeah, is too small for all the people there. Right. The garden is completely barren of any
just
life.
Other than bare minimum, just so you, yeah, can say there's something for,
yeah,
you.
Yeah. I mean, the whole purpose of it seems to be shoveling people through the doors. And, yeah. Because they talk about, you know, how many people have come to garden parties and things, and as if that's all it's about.
Yeah.
It's just getting numbers through doors.
I was always stuck on the land I own. I mean, with everything going on, people are getting smaller and smaller. Just but the land.
But their logic is always, their rule of thumb is, look, you know, if something needs fixing or paying for, it's public,
yeah,
and if it comes down to who gets to use it, it's private, yeah, and that's what they do with Buckingham Palace. And they've been told by MPs 15 years ago. They said, why don't you open up to tourists all year round? And they come up with a litany of excuses about, yeah, the fact that it's a working building and all the rest of it. And the MPs, and some of these were monarchists, they said, well, tourists can go into White House, which is more of a working building, and tourists can go through the Vatican, which is a working building.
Yeah.
Why can't they go through Buckingham Palace? And, yeah, do you really, and one of them said something like, you know, is it really a problem tourists going through the staterooms if Andrew's upstairs having his lunch? I mean, yeah, it doesn't matter. You know,
didn't they do it with, what was Elvis Presley's house called?
Graceland.
Yeah, because, yeah, what's her name was still living upstairs. They said you could go to everywhere, but the bottom of the stairs was a rope.
But this is true of a lot.
Because you had to make money.
Yeah, well, I think, but a lot of these stately homes, people live there, and,
yeah, yeah,
and I mean, a lot of them they don't, but a lot of them they're still there, and there's clearly doors, yeah, where you can't go in, right, because that's, yeah, where they live.
So the setting up of the Republic, what was it? The Pro Republic. What was the idea behind setting up the company?
Well, I didn't set it up. It was set up in 1983. I got involved in
that far back.
Yep, 2003. I got involved. So 20 years later, and it was still a fairly small club. I mean, the people that set it up in 1983 is a guy called Albert Stanley, who was a retired librarian, right, and he wrote a letter to a magazine called Free Thinker, and just said, "Look, you know, wouldn't it be a great idea if there was an organisation that sort of promoted this idea?"
Yeah.
And that was more or less the limit of their ambition, just to have someone somewhere that was going to say, this is, yeah, a good idea. And this is pre-internet. It's back in the age of, you know, big royal weddings and not really getting a word in edgeways on opposition. So for 20 years, it sort of, it did bits and pieces. And they had a chair for a while, Professor Stephen Hazler, who did some TV and was reasonably well-connected to do interviews and things. But it's really in the last 15 years we started to move things along a little bit. And actually the wedding in 2011 was a huge help to us. You know, our membership started going up without us doing anything. And then we started to campaign around all the added.
Well, social media just coming along.
And social media has been a huge help to all campaigns, I think. And I know a lot of people complain about the internet generally and social media specifically about the negative impact. And that's all legitimate. But I think that for voices that don't get a look in, or voices where the mainstream media are inclined to say, well, we're not interested, that can really add a lot of value.
Yeah, I think the internet gets a bad rap. I think it just gives you what you want from it. Like, it's nothing. It gives you the bad and it gives you the good. It saves the world and
it gives everyone a megaphone.
But it is a leveler. And if you level things up, then the bad guys get leveled along.
Yeah, because you wouldn't have been able to do this on the BBC 30 years ago. They're not going to have you on.
Even now.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, they're getting slightly better, but they are dreadful. I didn't realise before until a few weeks ago, actually, that I don't look that closely for these things, but they actually send out an email called something like Royal Watch or something, and it's absolutely dreadful. I mean, there's no journalistic integrity to it. It's just
What's Royal Watch?
It's just an email that, you know, you can subscribe to from the BBC, and it's just one of their correspondents sending, you know, the latest bits and pieces about what the royals have been doing.
Because it's the BBC, I'm assuming it's positive and it's not sort of like pedo watch or whatever.
It's all
human rights watch.
You know, they're working really hard and Charles wants to show that he means to do something constructive or whatever.
I think it's very positive to keep banging the gong, as it were.
Yeah.
And to keep this, to keep going and to keep it in the sort of consciousness, keep that voice. You know, out there. Because I think it's one of those things, I think the more people think about it, if people actually get to stop and think about it for a second, even a few seconds, you start to go, like with the House of Lords. I mean, the House of Lords, I think, is an easy in, because, like, the House of Lords makes zero sense and is utterly undemocratic and really just shouldn't exist in a modern society. And if you actually get people to sort of stop and think about it, they'll go, oh, yeah, that, yeah, whoa, yeah. No, that's completely messed up. Yep. What?
I mean, the thing is, we mean business in terms of getting rid of the monarchy, and we're going to do it, but it's a question of when, not if. Yeah. I think, to some extent, someone said during the run-up to the coronation that the spell is broken, people don't care that much, they don't mind criticising them, and they're happy to talk. And as you said, when people stop and think about it, they do change their minds.
Yeah.
This year alone, there were two sort of debates that bookended the year to some extent. There was one right at the beginning in January, which is in North London. And it was kind of a literary group, and the average age was probably about 70, and there's about 100 people in the room. And at the start of the evening, 25 of them were on our side. At the end of the evening, 52 of them were. So people changed their minds.
Yeah.
And just more recently, I was at Exeter University doing the debate there, their debating society, and there's about 140 people there, and they allow you to vote to abstain at the start, but they don't allow you to vote to abstain at the end. And it was 50 on our side, 50 on the other side, or thereabouts, and 40 abstentions. At the end of the night, it was 93 on our side, because people stop and think about it, they hear the arguments, and they go, you know, yes, this obviously makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, the monarchists in that occasion didn't help themselves. One of the students said, as soon as one of them opened his mouth, he lost half of them. But, Ben, you know, if monarchists keep on defending the monarchy, they'll help us an awful lot.
Well, no young people are going, I love Kate and Wills. All they know is the Netflix show, the podcasting with that sort of.
Well, there was a thing that I saw someone, Omid Scobie, the royal commentator, saying, I think he was quoting an article in Harper's Bazaar, saying that for an awful lot of people now, the most prominent cultural sort of connection that people have to the royal family is the crown.
Yeah.
And nothing else. And people don't care. I mean, for years they were talking about, you know, all the young royals, meaning Harry and William. Yeah. And sometimes you still get that. And they're 40.
Yeah, I was going to say
they're older than me.
And if you're 18, you don't look at a 40-year-old. But they're
for younger people. They're much, much further away than Meghan. And if something happened to Will, say like he became king, which he's going to do.
Yeah.
If he died, is Harry still there?
No, it goes William and then George and then Charlotte and then Louis.
Oh right,
they go to his kids.
Yeah.
Oh right, so he doesn't.
If William and his three kids and all get in a helicopter and it crashes, then Harry is.
Then they got a problem.
Yeah. And then they got to get Harry back. And then all of a sudden, Piers Morgan and all those other people will love Harry.
Well, as if we're in a King Ralph situation, basically.
Some American.
Which is a great film.
Which is a lovely film. I'd have John Goodman as king, you know. Yeah. Fair enough.
I'm assuming they changed the rules by then. So why doesn't it go to William, Harry? Harry. Because he's...
Well, it goes to the child of the heir.
So it doesn't follow the...
It was Harry. So whenever people have children...
that precedent.
So he's gone down from third in line to fifth.
It goes down that lineage.
Right, it doesn't go sideways. No.
It's, and it now includes the girls. But
yeah, I was just saying, what kids has he got now, William?
William's got two boys and one girl, and the girl's in the middle. So the up until 2013, whatever it was, the girl would have been after the boy.
Right, yeah.
And I think possibly you bumped way down the list. I can't remember, but they changed it to equalise it. Right. And this is... sold as a modernising thing that, you know, someone in the 100 years' time might be further up the list than...
So there might be a couple of other spare books. Spare book two and spare three.
I mean, as it is now, we've got 100 years ahead of us of old men from the same family, white, Anglo-Saxon, church-going, you know, military-serving men who will all be in their 50s at least when they're king, if not in their 60s and 70s. that's what we've got to look forward to. And if you look at other countries, if you look at Ireland or Iceland or Germany, and you look actually look at the people that they elected as head of state, they have had some brilliant heads of state and really inspirational people. And that's what we could have, a succession of inspirational, different, diverse people over the next 100 years, or Charles, William and George, all in their dotage when they become head of state, who represent nothing but more of the same. And that is, as much as anything, a reason to get rid of it.
Yeah. I think it's
I've always, sorry, but yes, I've always had this thing. Oh, well, what do you want instead? What do you want? President Tony Blair? President, you know, Boris Johnson? And I always said, well, no, I want the option to choose. Right or wrong, or whether I agree with it or not, I want the option.
I've met one person all my time doing this that wants Blair to be president. And, you know, you don't win elections if no one wants you. Yeah. So if everybody is saying, who do you want, President Blair? Then no, obviously not. But if he did get elected, then great. That's because people want him. And that's the point. With Charles, no one voted for him. No one particularly wants him. And no one's interested in him. And 9% were excited about the coronation. And the difference between a republic and a monarchy is that in a monarchy, we're supposed to stand on the pavement as spectators and wave. And in a republic, you are participants and you get to choose who it is. You get to stand to be in that job and you get to be a, you know, you get some ownership of the whole system and who represents you. And that is as much as the what's wrong with the monarchy, as much as what's wrong with the constitution, it is the culture of being citizens rather than subjects, being, having that option, having those choices, and being able to elect people that represent changes in your society and changes in, you know, social changes and political changes, as they did in 1980 with the elections of Vigdis Finnbogadottir in Ireland, the first woman ever to be elected head of state of any country, and then Mary Robinson and Mary McAleese in Ireland, signifying huge social and political changes in Ireland as well. So it is a, it's an aspiration for the country beyond simply changing the constitution and beyond
and all be under the same laws, all have the same sort of law.
Yeah, and it's equality and democracy and citizenship, which it actually means what it says on the tin and doesn't.
Is it the king now? You can't, but he can't be arrested, can he? Because it's his police force. Like
that is a theory yet to be tested.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there was one king that obviously was arrested, tried, and executed.
Who was that? Oh, right,
Charles I. But he was tried by Parliament rather than by a court. But so it's arguable that you can do that. But, you know, in this day and age, you wouldn't want Parliament trying a monarch. Yeah. But I imagine that if Charles, you know, just in the middle of the street pulled out a gun and shot someone dead, they'd get rid of him and then arrest him afterwards.
If Trump could get away
with it, ask him to leave. They'd move to a Monaco.
There would definitely still be people defending him. It must have been a reason.
Well, we'll end on this then. So, I've wondered, where did this start with you? Because there must have been a time when you were like going to school in your little shorts and a ruler and a pencil case that you saw. Did the Queen sort of go past in a carriage and it splashed you with water?
No, my parents were always fairly ambivalent to the monarchy and Republican, but they didn't really tell us about it a lot. Yeah. My dad said that when he was 12, the previous king turned up at his village, or his town in Essex, and turned up, waved, said nothing, left. And so from that moment on, I was a Republican. And for me, it was similar. I certainly remember that at the age of 12 and onwards, I was didn't like the monarchy. And
any reason? Because it was naturally you think you'd see it on TV.
I think that because I wasn't being told that it's a great thing.
Yeah.
And in a child's mind, I think it's just a basic matter of fairness. And if you think, why is that person doing that when it could be someone else, or when we can all choose? You know. And as I got older and interested in politics, as I was from a young age, it just became more and more obvious to me. And getting involved in this, and since I've been doing it 20 years, the more I learned about it, the more I found out about it, and the more I thought about the arguments and the alternatives and whatever, the more outrageous it seemed and the more obvious the alternatives seemed.
We've come along at the right time because you've got the evolution that it's just naturally going to erode itself slowly. So it's just being part of that process and throwing out the facts and figures that people didn't know.
Well, it needs to be pushed. It won't. Yeah. I mean, they will still
be. No, but I mean, nature's on your side now. Yes. It's naturally going out.
There is, as I said, there's this kind of perfect storm of people. Yeah. And support will fall and fall and fall. But the actual institution needs to be pushed in order for it to fall over. And but it will happen, and we'll see it happening in other countries. We'll see the Commonwealth moving away from it. And we'll just see this at some point we'll get to the point where people go, well, what the hell are we doing?
Yeah.
Why are we spending this money?
What have you got coming up? Do you have a plan of action for the next sort of 1, 2, 3, 4 years?
Well, we're in the middle of working on a strategy for the next few years. And it's about trying to connect it to all these other issues. We want to sort of make the point that if you're interested in things like social justice, environmental justice, historic justice and so on, then all of these things connect.
Yeah.
And there'll be a lot more protests, so that's becoming a regular thing. So we're any big event, and if we can do smaller events as well, then we'll be there.
Small events are very important. Especially, I mean, even like just you go and do talks at universities. Do you know what I mean?
That kind of thing. Yeah,
podcasts.
We do loads of them.
Go where you're not usually seen. Not
getting
the news
the word
channels.
Out,
yeah,
you know, we just, do. Just so we've got a big focus on media, and obviously we're thinking about the what comes after the next election, where we're likely to have a Labour government with a large backbench, and that's going to make it a lot easier to work with politicians, because politicians do have to come around and start talking about this, even if they don't necessarily need to agree with us at the government level. We need them to start engaging with it more seriously.
Well, your work's fantastic. The book's fantastic. You've been on everybody's read. You've come along at the right time, and you're doing the right thing. So,
abolish the monarchy, Graham Smith. Good read. I recommend it. It's not as radical, possibly, as the title may.
It's the best book about what that is.
Yeah, it's very reasoned, a decent laid out argument. Yeah. So,
Hopefully, I mean, we don't want to skip forward 30 years and you've got a crown on your head. You've replaced the monarchy.
That's the real plan.
Yeah. All right, listen, Graham, it's absolutely fantastic to meet you. Thank you for doing this on this Sunday.
Thank you very much.
And we're going to keep an eye on everything you're doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Yes, mate. Here's your story. Let's begin. The world is fine. Come on, dive in. The future's here. It's right before your eyes. Step by step, you're on your way. Welcome to a brighter day. Don't you know it feels good to be alive? You could be larger than life. Bigger than life.